I hope you don't have to stand back here. It's like, you just have to see it to believe it. I shouldn't be standing right now. That's for. My name's Chris. I'm a real cocaine addict. Thank you. Well, it's my distinct honor, I guess you could say, to introduce a good friend of mine. He asked me for the $10 introduction, so it's just going to be real short and sweet. I've known him for a good little while now. I've gotten to know him a lot better over the last year, and it's just a little bit overwhelming for me to be standing right here, and with all this going on, it's just a really neat deal. So without any ado, I'm going to have Chrissy come on up here.
Can you hear me all right? My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a drug-addicted alcoholic. I need to tell you, I am a shy, sensitive alcoholic and a drug addict, and as my brother is also. And this is going to be kind of interesting. I'm gonna give me a second, got to get my bearings under. I love children. I'm conscious that some kids in there, so I'm going to really try to keep the cussing to a minimum. Some of y'all that have heard me speak before will know that that's going to be an impossibility, so I suggest you stay real close to their little precious ears, because, you know, but I'm going to try, okay? How cool this is. I don't know, I guess it's about the third time I've got to speak over here, and this is one of my all-time favorite places. We get a nice little cross-section here. We've either got dyed-in-the-wool, I mean, big-book thumping fools that come to this group, you know, or you got some middle-of-roaders that are going to hang out, and they're not going to like this talk, and they're not going to like me, and they're not going to like my brother, I can promise you. And some of you guys that are detoxing still, I know some of you are a little on the shaky side. My brother and I are identical twins, and but he is. I mean, we do this good seed, bad seed every once in a while. This is the second or third time we've got a chance to do this. It's pretty fun. When you wait till you hear him, I mean, he's just like me. He gets as lathered up as anybody else about this thing called recovery, and that's all we want to talk about. I'm going to try to talk for 40 minutes or so, and then let Myers talk for as long as he wants to. Hopefully, we can get you out of this smoke in short order. I know that they're going to tape this, and we'd like you guys, even if you don't want the tape, to buy it and help support Cocaine Anonymous, and that's what this is about. These things, little fundraisers. I was driving into town this afternoon. Jeannie and I were coming in. We were on Katy Freeway. Some of y'all know where Katy Freeway is. If that don't come close to triggering you, I don't know what will. Katy Freeway is something else. I was driving down the deal, and she said, "Chris, look over to your left." And there's this big stretch semi, you know, the limo deal, you know. And he says, "Look over to your right," because it's blindside, and I'm having to way over for this one. There's a vet, brand new, off the showroom. Paper tag vet, Corvette, and I'm saying like, and I'm driving a fucking rented Lumina, you know, you know, and it's like, and Jeannie says, "Well, one thing about it, you know, I don't care what we're driving, we're all on Katy Freeway, you know, and that's where we're at." And so, I see some of my buddies from Narcotics Anonymous back here, and I've seen a lot of my friends from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a good. I absolutely adore Cocaine Anonymous, and a lot of our cats from the fellowships are here, and we got a lot of people on different pages in this room, and I just need to tell you that in the process of me sharing tonight, or my brother, if we don't use the proper terminology, you know what I'm saying? Sober, clean, straight, not fucked up. I don't know how we say it, but if we don't use the right terminology, y'all just bear with us, okay? Because it just takes forever to do this if we want to try to get through this, okay? If I'm referring to alcohol in this context, please, you guys substitute the words. Y'all know what we're talking about here. I hope. If you don't, we can share later. I don't know. I got sober in November 13th, 87. my first attempt at Alcoholics Anonymous was in the very early 80s, 79, 1980, up in North Texas. They didn't have any Cocaine Anonymous at the time up there. I tried some Narcotics Anonymous. But basically, I spent 8 years in and out of the fellowship trying to get well. I drank all through high school. I was in the food business. I was a chef here in town for years. Drunk cooks, you know, I mean, what can I say? The place is thick with them right now, you know, and you know, somewhere along the line, about 1979, someone introduced me to cocaine, and I, in turn, tried to introduce everybody that I came in contact with cocaine. This was a miracle drug for me, because by the time 1979 had come around, alcohol had was slowing down for me. I couldn't drink a case of beer and go to work like I used to be able to do. And so all of a sudden, I discovered this white powder that would allow me to drink like a sumbitch all day long, you know, and then do a little bit more. And it was a wonderful, wonderful product. And I proceeded to bankrupt myself, four businesses last count, trying to stay on top of this thing called cocaine. You with me? Alcohol, I've done a lot of crazy things for alcohol, but nothing like nothing like cocaine. And there's a I just got a. I work at a treatment center. I do clerical work up in the Hill Country for a treatment center. It's a great place. We do a lot of alcoholics and addicts through there, and I know a lot of the people in the audience have been through there. And I just need to tell you, you know, Friday a week ago, I heard that one of my all-time best buds, a little girl that had come through with alcoholism several years before, and we'd got to be good friends and good friends with her family, and you know how we do sometimes, and she's down in SEU. It's a hospital piece of this place where they dry out and they medicate them. And I went down there to see her, to welcome her. Welcome back, you know, like we do. And I walked by this place where she was at, and I stopped on the other side of the room where she couldn't see me, and I had to catch my breath because I didn't recognize the woman. You see, when she was at this hospital before, she was an alcoholic. And she was a pill addict, and she was going through the ringers. And now she's back as a crack addict. You see, and I got to tell you something, folks. She got caught in the crack house and had the living daylights beat out of her. And I'm not going to go into a lot of details about what happened to her. Y'all know exactly what happened to her. But I'm going to tell you this, folks. There's a lot of levity in this, and we're going to laugh a lot. But underneath it, there's some passion here that I can't hide. Because we don't have time to screw around with this thing called crack addiction, cocaine addiction. We don't have time to screw around with any of it. And I got to tell you something, folks. One of the reasons that I'm so passionate, and I'll tell you that's one of the reasons that Myers is so passionate, is that we nearly died once we got to our respective fellowships, because we couldn't hear the message that was supposed to be given, because we had too many people talking about everything else under the sun except the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. When I speak from the podium, a lot of times, you know, I just got back from Canada about a month ago. I'm still trying to get my voice back. God, it's cold up there. I don't know how anybody would live up there, you know. But if my voice gives out, that's blame it on that. But I was at a CA function up in Canada doing there. While that y'all were doing CA around the world here, I was in Canada freezing my ass off doing it up there. And it was a cool deal, you know. But you think that it would be different. But you know, guess what, guys? You know, cocaine in Canada is just like cocaine in the States, you know, and it drops you to the bottom just as fast. The only thing difference is you freeze while you're doing it, you know. And I don't know. Like I said, we go out there and watch some little girls out there hooking on the street, and I said, God, can you imagine out there hooking in that kind of weather? I bless them, bless them. But understand where my passion comes from. And I'm talking to a lot of you cats in the audience that understand where I'm at, and you appreciate this talk, and you're going to... And some of you are not there yet, and I'm with you. And if you need to go smoke and this gets a little hot for you, by all means, bless you. But I'm not going to stand up here and water the message down because it makes you uncomfortable. I'm just not going to do it. Not now, not ever. You see, in 1987, I'll tell you what happened. About 1980, I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we had a lot of treatment centers up there in North Texas that were cranking out recovering alcoholics and addicts by the thousands. And this was insurance companies were still paying like slot machines. And there was a lot of people coming out into our fellowships. One of the things that you'd see, though, is that these cats, none of them were working the steps, but they were therapized to the max. Now, I've been accused of knocking therapy. I have never once knocked therapy. I'm a product of some great therapy. But I never got sober doing therapy. I got sober because, what does this sign say right here? When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I had to have a thing called a spiritual experience in order to recover. But you see, nobody in 1979, 1980 were going to talk to me about a spiritual experience. They were going to talk to me about my inner fucking child until the cows came home. You see? You seem a little tense today, Chris. How are you feeling? And I would proceed to tell them. I would proceed to tell, you know, and it's funny, you know, I can give a talk like this in Canada and we'll talk about how you're feeling and get the same laugh. And yet we'll go into our meetings and that's all we want to do is sit there and rat cage that crap. I'm going to talk about what alcoholism is and what drug addiction is out of the book. And it's a pretty cool thing because it's pretty simple. In 1987, I landed in a room full of people up in North Texas. Some of y'all have heard me say this 1,000 times. But these cats loved me enough to tell me the truth. They said, Chris, just because you come into this fellowship doesn't mean that your life is going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have some bad days. You're going to have some shit days. But because you're going to recover... My little brother Graham had introduced us, you know, when he was talking, introduced himself as a recovered addict because that's what he is. Today, the desire to use has been lifted from him. Now, goddamn, I don't know how you can get any more recovered than that. Does he still have some problems? Yeah, he does. He's as fucked up as Hogan's goat. I can guarantee you that. But so all of us do. And I think I'm coming to you from a little special place tonight because I'm going to tell you, about six months ago, I kind of dumped into this little depression. And I don't know what this was about, really. I think it's midlife crisis, I think. I think I'm finally just getting fucking old, you know. I don't know. You know, but I don't know what this is about. I'm working a program. I'm doing the deal. But all of a sudden, work is... It's a pain in the butt, and relationships are a pain in the butt, and I'm... Y'all understand what I'm saying? Driving down the road, grinding your teeth, I ain't having a real good life here, God. What the fuck's up with this? You know, and it's like, can you help me here? And it's like, okay. But through all of this stuff, and I've been through some real heavy-hearted stuff here lately, but all of this stuff, I'm coming out the other side, not obsessing about cocaine and not drinking alcohol. You with us? And see, that's what this program is about. This program is about power. When I first came up to Houston and started talking about 5 years ago over at the Good for Nothing over at Bay Area, well, it's one thing that we talked about. We talked about power. And there's a lot of people with eyes like this sitting in that audience because they never heard us talking about power in a meeting. Everybody wants to talk about powerlessness until the goddamn cows come home. And it just makes me want to scream. See? I believe that we have a primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Chicken Molesters Anonymous and whatever the hell we're doing. I think we have a primary purpose to share a message of hope with that newcomer that comes in the door. And if we can do that, then we can pull those cats with a vision, then they'll stay in our fellowships. And I'm going to tell you guys, I got a hospital full of people waiting for me back in the hill country. Again, all of these cats have been to our fellowship before. How come they didn't stay? A lot of you guys stayed. A lot of you guys are well today because you walked in the damn door of an AA meeting or a Cocaine Anonymous meeting and said, I need help. How come it worked for you and it didn't work for them? I'm going to submit something to you folks. A lot of us want to dust this stuff under the table and say, well, they just weren't ready yet. And I think that's a damn cop-out. Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. In 1980, as my first wife is walking out the door, and my first business is going down the toilet, and I'm puking blood, and I truly have spent every penny I've got on cocaine, I was ready to quit. The partying had stopped, folks. I think if we've got some family members in here, you might be really interested to understand this. We're not sitting in a room full of people that just party too fucking much. You know, I mean, I don't know how to explain this to you. You know, that's that hard drinker set out there. That's those hard druggers out there. The real McCoy, the real alcoholic and drug addict, reaches a point where alcohol and drugs ceases to be the problem. Alcohol and drugs starts to be the solution. You with me? And now I got to get up and I got to go vacuum the carpet, but I need a little bump, just a little bumpy poo to get me through, you know? I need to call that girl and ask her out for a date, but I need a little courage to do that. So I bust in another snow. Well, come on, guys. This is what alcoholism and drug addiction is. We use to get through the goddamn day. Do we sometimes overdo it? Yes. Is it sometimes misunderstood as partying? Yes. But let me tell you something. My little friend that's sitting down at the hospital right now that had the shit kicked out of her in that crack house in Austin, Texas, she wasn't partying. Please. Please. You make no bones about that. If her face ever heals, she can come share with you too. Let's visit. Can y'all see the little guy up here? We're going to try to do a couple little quick things here. This is little issue man. You know, Bay Area's got the little stick man. I've been doing issue man for ages. He's a pretty cool little guy. This is to kind of show you what alcoholism and drug addiction is. And for some of you guys, this may be opposite to what you've heard. And again, I'm not going to be up here arguing with anybody. I don't know why. But I always end up being the controversial one. Well, but you know, my sponsor says this. Well, my therapist says this. Well, I learned in treatment this. And I ain't all going to argue with any of that. It's all good stuff. Welcome. Y'all with me? This is the basis that we're going to go on. I'm going to talk about some first step stuff. And then in a little bit, Myers is going to come up here and talk to you about some 12-step stuff. Because I'm going to tell you, if I know one reason why these cats don't stay sober, it's they never get connected and go do 12-step work. They start off like Roman candles, and then they stop. And guys, that's why I couldn't get sober for 8 years. Nobody ever said, Chris Raymer, you got to get off your butt if you're going to get sober. I just figured if I kept going to meetings, yeah, I'd get it. I didn't. All I did was stay irritable, restless, and discontent, and watch the clock on the wall, and could not wait to get out of those goddamn rooms. Because I wasn't experiencing the power that were in those rooms. Y'all with me? It's like going to a gym. You want some big muscles? You can go sit in the lobby all you want to, folks, but it ain't going to happen until you start lifting some weights. You know? Let me draw this up here real quick. My brother got up here and screwed my board up and drew all this other stuff. Some of y'all can see this stuff back there. Some of you can't. I'll make his little eyes bigger so y'all can get in. Hey, yeah. Here, I just put me up here. There you go. Alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, is a three-part disease, and we all talk about it. It's the physical allergy coupled with the mental obsession and the spiritual malady. And all of this stuff, you know, it gets down to the brass tacks. This is what makes an alcoholic. Nothing out there, I guess it's probably the most controversial thing I've ever said from the podium. Nothing out there causes me to drink. And that's everybody wants to talk about it. But guy comes back in after a relapse. What happened? Well, she left. No, excuse me a minute. Because she left him too, and he didn't get drunk. Why did you? You see, we got to get down to brass tacks, no? I know it's traumatic, but here again, if you're spiritually connected, you'll have the power to get through all this crazy shit. Now, that's what we're talking about, guys. Talking about power. This word right here in the physical piece of this thing is about control. You with me? How come it is that certain ones of us can control this stuff and some of us can't? About 15% of us, 15% are alcoholic and addict, folks. Across the board, you look out over Houston, Texas, and across the board, about 15% of us are alcoholic and addict. Now, guys, I don't care what third, fourth ward you go to. I don't care River Oaks you go to. I don't care wherever. There's a lot of hard drinking goes on down in third and fourth ward. I understand that. I used to drink down there. By God, I'm hip. But there's no more percentage of alcoholism down there in the poor part of town than there is in the rich part of town. And we got to get straight with this crap. Alcoholism and drug addiction is a disease. If you're drinking because little mommy set you on a potty backwards, you need to do some good therapy and go someplace else. You hip? Okay. Yeah, or try it backwards. It works great that way. Okay. The physical allergy, folks, the physical allergy, Dr. Silkworth talks about this phenomena of craving. How many of you guys have ever noticed that some people could do a little cocaine and put it down? And some of you cats could do a little cocaine and say, my, that's... I was over at a date over a girl off of Antoine Road, and she, we were doing some cocaine, and I thought I was a big shot because I'd brought some cocaine. I was high rolling. You know, I'm a shoe-in tonight. You know, this is going to be, I'm bringing cocaine. I couldn't get laid if I had two pockets of cocaine, folks, but that's the truth. But I did a little bit, and she did a little bit, and she says, my, that's nice stuff. Thanks for letting me try some of that. And I said, well, hon, you're not going to do any more? She says, oh, no, no, I'll be up all night if I do that. Well, that was kind of what I had in mind. I don't know what to tell you. But what happened was, she's different. She's a part of the 85%er. She put a little in her body. She enjoyed it, but it made her feel a little. She called it racy. It makes me feel racy. I call that it makes me feel right. I don't know what yours is. But I put a little bit in my body, and I want some more. You see? But she's ready to stop. See? Given sufficient reason, can you stop? See? The physical allergy kicks in with me, and there's times I end up drinking or drugging more than I intended. This sets us apart as a separate entity. But then you put this mental obsession piece, this thing about choice, and that, can you stop given sufficient reason? Can you stop because you've got to get up and go to work the next day? Can you stop because you've spent all your money? We were laughing at the hospital the other day. They ask all these crazy questions when the patients get there. How many DWIs have you had? And how many times you've been in a fight? And how many, all this other horse shit. To find a cocaine addict, you got to ask them one fucking question. One question. Have you ever gone back to a pulse machine more than once in a night? Isn't that right? Because listen, guys, at $1.50 a pop, normal people don't do that. If they need $60, they get $60. But I go by and do it every time. No, I just need $40. I'm just going to do a little bit. And then I'm back again. And I'm back again. And I'm back. My first wife used to look at this. She says, what the shit is this? $20, $20, $20, $20, $20. Like, what? But what happened? What happened? Did I intend to do that? No. Listen, when I went to that money machine at 6 o'clock, I intended to do $20 worth. You with me? Just a little bit. How much did I do? Until in that ghostly blue light, I saw the little sign that comes up there and says, insufficient funds. That's how much I did. Yeah, that's how much I did. Can you stop given sufficient reason? And does this phenomenon of craving kick in? If that's the case, folks, you're one of us. You're one of us. I can't tell you how many times I've been out drinking with somebody or doing some bump or pills or whatever we were doing that night and look over and says, how about some more? And they say, no, thank you. I've had enough. You see, guys, we don't understand. Guys, that's like having sex and in about mid-poke say, oh, no, that's enough for me. I'm done. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. But you see, alcoholics and addicts, you guys are laughing out there because you understand exactly what I'm talking about. And the family members, they're freaked out because listen, guys, given sufficient reason, they can stop. When they start using, folks, you ask any alcoholic or drug addict, you ask them what happens when they start using alcohol and drugs, and I'll tell you exactly what they'll say. They begin to reach a point where they gain control. You with me? And you ask any normal drinker what happens after they've had a few drinks, they begin to lose control. See? And that's the difference. The alcohol and drugs is not my problem. The alcohol and drugs fixes what's wrong with me. Internally, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent, and I go do a little cocaine, and I'm on top of the damn world. And I don't give a rat's ass if I'm living in a raggedy old hole with a beat-up car and no job. You with me? For just a few minutes, everything's okay. Isn't that right? Okay. Why are you living in that raggedy old hole? Because you do too much drugs. It doesn't seem to compute, though, does it? You know, it doesn't seem to compute. Well, I'm going to do just a little tonight and kind of figure out what the problem is, and then we're off to the bed. And we do this again and again and again, folks, until the bottom drops out, and then we just do it some more and some more and some more. Because this internal condition is going to get treated one way or another. And I'm going to tell you this, folks. Our textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous that Cocaine Anonymous so wisely picked up 18, 19 years ago when we first got our fellowship, it got right down to brass tacks about this business, about that spiritual malady. That will be treated, or you will continue to drink and you will continue to drug. And you don't have to wait till the bottom drops out to prove that you're one of us, folks. And I watch people do that every day. This will be treated. On page 59 and 60 in the book where it reads how it works, it talks about no human power can relieve what's wrong with us. Isn't that right? So why do we spend so much time on human power stuff trying to fix these problems? I'm going to say a real quick one here, because I've got to get into this real quick and then get out so Myers can have a chance to talk. Do I want to do that? Let me see if I want to do that. All right. I'm gonna open up this can of worms now. Now, I'm going to preface what I'm going to fix and just talk about, because I haven't done this from the podium before. I'm going to preface what I'm talking about with my disclaimer saying that I have done exactly what I'm going to tell you guys not to do. You with me? I'm not talking from any spiritual mountaintop saying, you people are doing it wrong and I'm doing it right. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, let's all of us as a fellowship, Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics, let's all of us as a fellowship look and see what we're doing. All right? And see if we're not possibly heading in the wrong direction. Okay? One of the most controversial things I've been saying for the last 10 years is that we have gotten off the page by going into meetings and allowing them to denigrate into pissing and moaning contests. You with me? War stories are what's killing Alcoholics Anonymous today. And I'm going to tell you something. It'll kill AA, and then it'll kill Cocaine Anonymous. And that's a fact. Of all the people that come through our hospital, we ask these cats, why didn't they stay? And the number one complaint with our fellowship is the war stories. Because you see, the book tells us to tell war stories, doesn't it? Does it? Let me tell you. Bill Wilson, y'all remember the first part in the front of the book where Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob get together? No, excuse me. Ebby comes over in 12 steps, Bill Wilson. And Ebby comes in, and the first thing he does with Bill Wilson on a one-on-one basis is start sharing some war stories with him. You with me? And then Bill Wilson, and talks about back over in Vision for You, Dr. Bob and Bill get together, and they tell that about that great first meeting in Akron where Bill tells a few stories to Dr. Bob and gets his interest and says, God damn it, this guy drank just like I did. You with me? One alcoholic working with another alcoholic. You down with that? Alcoholic number three. This is what it talks about on page 132. It says, we will relive all of our sordid past with this cat if we think we can get his interest. You with me? One on one. It doesn't say go into a meeting and share your fucking fist step. Well, that's the truth. It doesn't say... Here's what we're doing. Under the guise of sharing our experience, strength, and hope, here's what we're doing. We're walking into a meeting with 40 people, and then we're sharing our war story, okay? What are the odds that those people in that room have had the same experience you've had? I mean, where's this thing in this fellowship we call discernment? You're going to walk into Post Oak Club, right? Where you got all these some nice folks in suits coming up for lunch, eating their little ham sandwich. And you're going to start talking to them about being gang raped in a crack house. Now, let me tell you what you've done to that group. You haven't done them any service, I guarantee you. All you've done is alienated the entire group. I mean, are you fucking new or what? No, we got to get straight here. Why would you do something that stupid? Let me tell you why. Because you like to hear your head rattle. You ain't got a lick of sense. What you need to do in that store, in that meeting, is share some hope with the newcomer. Because let me tell you something. I don't care where those people are in that room. Everybody could use some more hope, couldn't they? Everybody could use a little pep rally. Right. The book says we share experience, strength, and hope, and that's what it's talking about. In a meeting, that's what we're supposed to be doing. Do you think I'm going to my meetings and saying, I think I'm going through midlife crisis. Could you guys help me? Oh, please. You got a guy up there dying of alcoholism on the front row, but I'm going to take up the whole fucking meeting talking about my midlife crises? I don't think so. No, we're not going to do that. I'm going to say, listen, I'm going through some tough times right now, but let me tell you something. The desire to drink hadn't hit me, and I have been taken to this place of neutrality, and I'm having a pretty goddamn good life despite the problem. You with me? At that point, the guy can come to me, and then if I want to get with him and share some war stories on a one-on-one basis, I can do that. What happens to me when I stand up in a podium and start telling my dumpster stories? I used to eat out of dumpsters over here in Houston, Texas, folks. I could tell you some stories that would make you cry. And there's a few of you people in here that have eaten out of dumpsters that will really relate to where what I'm talking about. The rest of you are going to go to sleep. The rest of you are going to tune me out. Well, I'm never going to be as fucked up as him. Isn't that right? Why did I bother to tell you the story in the first place? Because I'm trying to impress you with how bad I was. Guys, I've said it 1,000 times from the podium. I'm going to wind this thing down. I absolutely do not have the right to try to scare another person into our fellowship. You can't do it. If we could, Bill Wilson would have put it in the instructions. You want to get a newcomer here? Tell him your fucking war stories and tell him about the yets. The book doesn't talk about the yets. The book talks about the good stuff that's going to happen when you get off your ass and work these steps. That's what it says.
Jesus.
Let me read something to you. This is what happened in 1987. As I walked into that room, I'm going through some problems with a little significant other, and which is a nice way of saying I ain't getting laid. I owe a lot of money. I'm having some health problems. I'm working for my brother. Otherwise, I'd be on the street. Bless him from the podium for hiring me. But life is tough, folks, and I'm not a happy camper. And I walk into the rooms believing that it's going to be like every other meeting I ever went to. We're going to sit around and piss and moan about our problems and pat each other on the back and tell us everything's going to be okay and we're going to go our own way. And these guys all carried big books, and they had all recovered, just like my brother was talking about. And they weren't thinking about drinking and drugging that day. They were thinking about the cool things that God was having them do. And they said, Chrissy, do you want some of this? You want what we got? Because I'm going to tell you, we don't want a goddamn thing you got. They said, if you want what we got, you come do what we do. We're talking to a brother over here about it this earlier. God bless them for sponsorship like that. And listen, after the meeting, if you want to go talk about the girl, we'll go talk about the girl. But right now in this meeting, we're going to try to find somebody to work with. We're going to go try to find another drunk to work with. I ain't been sober long enough to work with nobody. See, that's the problem. That's the problem. We keep letting each other off the hook. And sooner or later, we all got to go do it. This is where I want you guys to be. My prayer is that little girl in that hospital tonight is in this place. It's called the 10th Step Promises. Y'all know where it's at? Hang on a second. I got to set this down. This is terrible. This is something else that happened. I got to put my cheaters on. I think I look pretty dignified, don't you? Listen, guys, for years, nobody ever showed me this. 8 years in the fellowship, and nobody ever talks to me about power. They're too busy sitting around talking about powerlessness. And then, oh, you're just powerless over people, places, and things. I'm going to tell you again from this podium like I've done every time I've talked here. I am not powerless over people, places, and things. I guarantee you, the people that I sit with today, I want to sit with. The people that I go into business with, I want to be in business with. I don't do shit today I don't want to do. You hear me? Okay, that's power that I derived from the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. That's the power that this book promises every one of us to have. We fostered a fellowship of victims. You want to get let off the hook? You want to get let off the hook? All you got to do is tell somebody, well, I'm a crack addict. Oh, you poor dear. Well, that lets you off. That means that you can show up late to work and cheat your employer and run around on your wife and do all this stuff. Yeah, oh yeah, because you're a crack addict. Once you recover, folks, this is what happens. It's on page 84 if y'all want to look it up in your book. The greatest promise in the book, it says, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Can you believe that shit? Even cocaine, we've stopped fighting. So much for triggers list there, huh? So much for worrying about walking in the 7-Eleven down here because they got some alcohol in there. You don't want to go in there because it might cause you to drink. And don't listen to that. Listen, I don't want anybody to come to that dance tonight. They're going to, listen, rumor has it, they're going to be playing rock and roll. And my buddy's going to be there and she's going to be shaking it. And I'm going to tell you what, you don't want to watch that because then, that's right, baby, you, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you. You. And she's going to be shaking it, and that stuff triggers the shit out of me. You know what I'm saying? Well, I have to just go out and fire one up just because of you. Come on, baby. I know. because I've recovered and I don't, no, I don't have to do that today. For by this time it says sanity will have returned. Sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor or cocaine. If tempted, we recoil from it like it was a hot flame. Here it is. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this happens automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor and cocaine have been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Yes? This book tells us how to keep in fit spiritual condition, folks. And it doesn't say, I pray every day. It says we get off our ass, shoulder to shoulder, one alcoholic, one cocaine addict, together, going and getting another one. That's what we do. You with me? That's what my brother's going to talk about right now. Yeah.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Sick boy.
Let me introduce that boy.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
No. I know. He said, you're not going to tell him about that sheep, are you? And I said, no. No, I'm not going to tell it. Everybody from the hill country, sooner or later, you get drug out to the field with a sheep or I'm just telling you, okay? In 1987, when I got sober, I was working for my brother. And I got to tell you something, folks. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story and what he's doing. But I'm going to say this. He probably works with more alcoholics and addicts than anybody else I know. And he, in Dallas, does the same kind of stuff I do in the hospital. He is out there carrying the message of hope. And he's going to talk about that. But this is the classic stuff, folks. What works for him will work for you. The same stuff that I did worked for him. And it's this common solution that we talk about. And some of you guys in here are feeling kind of hopeless. I'm going to tell you something, folks. Grab hold of somebody with some light in their eye. And absolutely, hopefully it's a pretty girl. Yes. And go do this work. And go do this work. Y'all give Myers a big hand. Thanks. You got plenty of time. Let me get that board. Hi, everybody. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. That's so cool. I always want to do that again. I'm a garden variety drunk, and I would. I'm a garden variety drunk who did toe sacks full of drugs, and it's so good to be here. I can't tell you. There's no place on God's green earth I'd rather be than in a meeting just like this with a bunch of guys just like you. It's the damnedest thing. I got to tell you a couple of things real quick. I walked in this room and saw that sign and almost wept. Almost wept. I grabbed Chris. I said, Chris, look. 7 years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not one person showed me that. Not one person. And all the, no wonder I was twisting in the wind and dying in the fellowship. Guys, let me preface this whole thing. I am the poster boy of middle of the road solution. I guarantee you. I know more half measures crap than you'll ever think up. I can tell you how to piss off more time in Alcoholics Anonymous, NA, and CA than any other man you'll ever meet. Trust me on this. Trust me. And I'm proof positive that you can hurt like a big dog in our fellowship. You can die doing this deal or what you think is this deal. There's so much stuff out there. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I want to thank those guys that asked us to come do this too, because this is the coolest. Being able to share a podium with my hero, Chris, and I'm let me tell you something. I know some of you think he's the son of a bitch, but you know, Chris saved my life twice in Alcoholics Anonymous. Two times. Once when I sobered up in 88, and again 7 years later when I was twisting like a big dog, hurting in this fellowship. I called Chris and said, Chris, I'm in trouble. And he came to my rescue one more time. And got me hooked up with a group of big book thumpers that showed me a solution right out of the book. So I could lay my opinions down, finally. I could lay it down. And that's the stuff that we're going to talk about. You know, we call this the good seed, bad seed tour sometimes that when we do this stuff. Or as I like to think, it's three eyes are better than two. At any rate, and in listening to Chris talk just a minute ago, I wanted to give this tape to my mom, but after hearing Chris talk, I probably can't do that now. I'll be better than Chris, honest. And for you guys that Chris stepped on, and you're feeling real hurt right now and real tweaky about the whole thing, you come see me after the meeting. I'm your go-to guy, man. We'll stand back over in the corner and we'll take his inventory and that's why I'm here. That's why they call me the good seed and him the bad seed. That's it. Not. Actually, more of you will get tweaky about what I'm going to say, I think. But anyway, somewhere from the podium at about 6 or 7 months sober, this is in late 88, a guy said, you know, in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, there are good 12-steppers and bad 12-steppers. And if you're not a good 12-stepper, you don't have any business carrying the message. All right, you got to picture the scenario, man. I'm in a middle-of-the-road group where God's been taken out of our meeting. We don't talk about God anymore because we're going to scare off the newcomer. I was there the night they made the decision to do it, and I didn't have the guts to say anything, and I didn't know what was in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the way, you guys that brought those books tonight, bless you. I saw a bunch of big books in this meeting. And you guys greeting at that door, God bless every one of you. That's what NACA and AA needs right there. So I'm thinking, this man, I could have kissed this guy that night. I could have kissed him because he took away every bit of the responsibility that I had to Alcoholics Anonymous. You see? Because I'm not a good 12-stepper. You see? And so, but we all do that, don't we? Let me ask you a question. You start going through the work, and what scares you more than anything? 12-step work. Somebody says something, there's something said in a meeting some night that's about, well, at some point in time, you're going to have to carry this message to somebody else, and you're going to go, oh, well, you know, when I get good and recovered, and I get all this stuff under my belt, and there'll be, I know, God will show me when it's time. It's time now. Right now. If you've been sober one day, you got a job to do with the guy that just came in here this morning. You got a job to do, guys. That's your responsibility. This stuff of holding the fellowship at bay is crazy. That's why so many of us are dying. That's why early AA was so... There they are. These addicts are getting younger all the time, man. Damn. That's why old AA was so effective, because they forced you to see your truth, and then they made you carry the message. It wasn't a choice. I mean, it wasn't something that you did if you just sort of felt like it. And we have trivialized that 12-step. If you got your big book, you can read it. I'll read it to you. That 12-step that says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, stop right there. There's a premise there that we're all going to operate under tonight. We're all going to go off the same page. And the page is this. All of us have had the psychic change. If you haven't had the psychic change, you don't have anything to carry. I know that makes some of you feel uncomfortable. I know it does. And I'm sorry. God bless you. Keep doing what we're doing. And I guarantee you, you'll have that change. That spiritual awakening is what we carry to the other guy. This isn't about our opinion. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. You understand that. Picture this situation. At 7 years sober, I'm suicidal. I'm writing hot checks all over Denton County. It's just a bad deal. My life is falling apart. Chris is gone by now. He's moved to the Hill Country, and I'm there in Dallas all by myself. Home of middle-of-the-road solution, I might add. And I'm just going nuts, man. I can't find it. We're going to all these meetings. I'm doing everything I think I'm supposed to do. And I'm getting real sick. And I'm starting to get physical with my wife again. and I'm starting to do the old stuff that I used to do. My kids are getting scared again. They're starting to duck when I walk in the room because they never know where I'm going to come from. Any of you guys understand this stuff? You understand what it's like to be this, the spiritual malady that we're talking about? You're being consumed from the inside by this stuff that's going to kill us, and I don't have any way to, I don't know what to do. I'm calling Chris and going, Chris, man, I'm dying here, man. If this is what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, I don't want it. I don't want it. And so he gets me in with these big book thumpers. They carry me through the work again, and I begin to understand. After a couple of weeks being in that meeting, God loved those people at Primary Purpose Group, Cliff Bishop and those guys. God loved them because they loved me enough in a couple of weeks to tell me the truth. And the truth was, Myers, you're an arrogant, self-centered, fearful son of a bitch. And you don't know anything that's in that book. Not one thing. You think you do because you've been to a jillion meetings and you can parrot all kinds of stuff. But you don't really know what's in that big book. You don't know what our solution is all about. So the things that you share are horse crap. And you have the power to kill people. I hear people say this all the time. Any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, God's there. No, he's not! Because God's got better things to do than to be in a room full of arrogant, egotistical people who have no... Do you understand what I'm saying? I know it offends some of you when I say that, but it's the truth. Our meetings have gotten so sick and so convoluted that nobody can recover. We're hurting in the fellowship. No wonder nobody's doing the deal. So I start learning what's in the big book, and I'm getting on fire, and I'm going nuts, and man, I'm calling Chris. We have a meeting. We have three meetings a week. They're all literature-based meetings. We got no discussion meetings. We call them disgusting meetings. We got no literature, no discussions. They're all literature-based meetings. And then every other night of the week, we're expected to be out carrying the message someplace else. And that's what we do. Our group now goes to almost 24 or 25 at last count different places every week. There's a jillion guys in that group and gals. And every night of the week, we're out someplace carrying that message. It's huge in that stuff. And if you don't want to carry the message, you don't last long in that group. So I'm still holding this whole thing kind of at bay. I'm having that psychic change. I know that I'm having that psychic change. And I remember sitting in this meeting one night, and I remember going, this is 2 years into that deal. So now I'm 10 years sober. I mean, 9 years sober. So I go, Cliff, after this meeting, I said, you know, there's still something that bothers me. I'm looking around this room, and I'm looking in the eyes of the other people at that table. And you know what? They look different than me. There's something there that's not in my life. And he goes, no shit. I've been trying to tell you this for years now. I've been trying to tell you this. What's different is that you keep holding 12-step work at bay like it's something that's an option, and it's not an option. You'll do the work, carry the message, or you'll get out. You'll never have what these men and women have until you start carrying the message. But I thought it was pretty rigid. I thought he was kind of, well, you know, there's my arrogance again. My case is different. You see? But Cliff Bishop held me accountable, and he made me do the things that I was going to do. And he said, Wednesday night, I want you out there to carry the message. And I was out there. And it was a painful, painful experience. Salvation Army, a room full of 45 black men, and I was scared spitless. I didn't know what I was doing. It was uncomfortable. I got through it. I came home that night. I called Cliff on the telephone. I said, Cliff, I did it. And he said, great. How about Friday night? Back out there again. And I went, oh. Yes, sir. Click. I go back out there Friday night. This guy walks up and hugs me. And I'm thinking, well, this is odd. And the things start changing. Now, I don't know about those guys. I don't know about the men in that room. But I began to change inside that night, the second night that I went out there. I'll cut to the chase on that stuff. We were there for a month or two, and then another deal opened up, and I went over and set that thing up, and we've been there 4 years doing that deal. But at the end of that month or two of being there, those men, one by one, stood there and hugged me and told me how much they loved me. And guys, I wept like a baby. I wept like a baby because these men had taught me everything. I understood. You know, it's funny. We come to Alcoholics Anonymous, NA and CA, and every one of us deep down inside, be truthful with yourself, every one of us wants a secret handshake to recovery, don't we? We do. We think eventually somebody's going to come up and say, you know, Myers, you're okay, bud. We're going to take you in the back room and we're going to show you the secret handshake. and it's going to be done. You're going to be fixed. Well, I'm going to show you the secret handshake. I'm going to tell it to you right now. The secret handshake of Alcoholics Anonymous is called the 12th step. You're going to have a psychic change as a result of doing 12 simple steps with a sponsor who has had that psychic change, key here, and then you're going to carry that message to another alcoholic. And in doing so, one alcoholic with another, your life is going to be changed immeasurably. Your life will be changed. I hear guys all the time say, well, I just want my old life back. Why? You've heard that stuff too, haven't you? I just want my old job back and my life back. I'm going, shit, you're a beat-up, arrogant drug addict. Why in the hell would you want that life back? When God tells us in step three that we're going to be reborn, right? We'll have a new... I got a buddy of mine that goes with me every Wednesday night out to this place at Homeward Bound. And John calls them do-overs. You ever play marbles when you were a kid or something like that? And you go, whoa, wait a minute. I dropped it. I want a do-over. That's what we've been given as a result of doing these steps. A big old do-over, man. We can take another look at it, another run at life. Oh, and this time, we're going to be doing it from God's will instead of self-will. This stuff that I wrote up here earlier, it looks like a mentally retarded person wrote it. I'm so sorry, I can't. Here's what we're talking about. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, NA and CA, has spent the last two generations concentrating on this. Relief. I can assure you, I don't care who you are or what you are or what your deal is, I can keep you busy enough in our fellowship to give you all the relief you need. Will you be happy? I don't know. Will you be free of that drug of choice? I don't know. I doubt it. Will you still be worried about those triggers? Yeah. I sponsored this guy one time. He said, man, Myers, you know what my biggest trigger is? There's this girl I dated one time that smelled this particular way. And every time I smell that smell, I just want to use. I'm going, well, what do? Walk around like this? I mean, how do you avoid the smells? You know? This is what relief has brought us. This is. You see? What we need to do is get focused on the book tells us over and over and over again about freedom. Freedom from that drug. This thing of obsessing and getting all twisted up about this stuff. Do the work and I guarantee you the freedom that you seek will be there. And then daily you'll seek God's will in your life. God's will gradually change your life from the self-will part to the God's will. You're living life in God's will and the freedom will be there. It's the way it is. It's the way the program was set up. Let me put this into perspective how far this is strayed. The only thing that separates you from good 12-step work is your arrogance. Your arrogance and your ego. Because your ego is saying, oh, that's going to make me feel real uncomfortable. I may say something stupid. Or I don't want to. If you look in your big book on page 132, it says, we have recovered and been given the power to help others. It was given to you. You didn't have to learn it. You didn't have to do it. It was given to you because you did the 12 steps. You had the psychic change as a result of doing the work. You'll have what you need to do it. You'll have it. I guarantee you, you will. This you're going to have to accept on faith. You're just going to have to accept it. I know what I'm talking about. Because I've seen it happen in so many lives since we've been doing this kind of stuff. I want to read something real quick. If I can get my stupid nose to quit itching. The worst part about a mustache. On page 161 in A Vision for You, this just blows me away reading this stuff. At the very bottom of 160, it says, picture this situation. These guys have just left a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, this guy and his wife. They were leaving this meeting. He and his wife would leave elated by the thought of what they could now do for some stricken acquaintance and his family. They knew that they had a host of new friends. It seemed that they had known these strangers always. They had seen miracles and one was to come to them. They had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful Creator. What is different in that story from your own life? These guys left a meeting and all they can think about is how elated they are at the fact that they can carry a message of recovery to somebody else. Guys, look, if you don't do this deal, if you go in back to your group and you sit in the stupid discussion meetings and you start doing all this stuff and then you twist off and you get loaded again, you don't tell me that this fellowship doesn't work because you didn't do the fellowship. You didn't do it. All you did was some middle-of-the-road, happy horse shit guaranteed to give you some relief.
Don't put the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, or CA, in that deal. The fellowship didn't work because you're too arrogant and self-centered to try it. And that's it. And you'll realize that one day. You will. I guarantee you will. I want to tell you a fast story and then I'll shut up. There's this guy. There's this guy that came into detox one night at this Homer Bound, this place in Dallas where we go all the time. One of the places that we go. And he walks in his little blue stuff, you know, the old attire, and he's sitting there just a mess. This guy was so scary looking. He'd been living in his truck in Oak Cliff, sleeping in the back of the truck. This was in the middle of the summer, and somebody had pulled him out of the back of the truck. A gang out there had pulled him out of the back of the truck by his feet, and his face had hit the floor and busted out all of his teeth. And he's got this red hair that sticks up straight, and he's just a mess, and he stinks, and he's my kind of guy, man. And who does he ask to sponsor him? Me. And I'm just wondering. We go through this stuff. Terry never balked at anything I asked him to do. Every time we were there, he was there. This guy lives in Oak Cliff. He catches a bus to the meeting, which is way across town from there. And then he catches a bus during the middle of the night to go back. For months he does this. And this kid's life is on fire. You can see it in his eyes. You can see it in every thing that he does and says. You can tell that this kid's got what he needs. Instead of sitting on his ass waiting for the state to get him a job, he was in line for a bunch of TRC stuff. What does he do? He comes up to me after a meeting one night and he says, "Myers, I need $10. And I said, "Well, you know what? I don't lend money to guys." And I said, "I've been through this 1,000 times. I'm thousands in the hole for doing it." And he said, "I need $10 until Friday." I said, "You got it, Terry." And I gave him the $10. You know what Terry did with the money? He went out and bought a brush and a bucket. And he grabbed him another guy in the fellowship, and they went out and started this little window washing business. And they started washing windows. And he starts putting together some money. And he starts gets him a little apartment. And then he gets his driver's license back. He's a commercial truck driver, long-haul truck driver. And Terry's life's on fire. And I walk into a meeting one night, and there's Terry with a new guy from one of the treatment centers. And he's sitting there, and he's got a big book open on his lap. And he's sitting there carrying the message of recovery. Terry's been sober now at that point 2 months, maybe 3 months, and he's carrying a message of recovery to this new guy coming in there. And I just busted out, man. Here it is. The kid that he carried the message to that night is still sober and still goes to our group, and I see him all the time. Terry's now doing this long-haul stuff across the country. And he stops in all these little towns and he goes to these meetings, and when they don't have anything but a stupid discussion meeting, he steps up to the plate and he says, "Let me make a suggestion. Let's get back into the big book." And he changed meetings all over Tennessee and Kentucky. All over that state. This little old beat up guy with no teeth. He can barely talk. His mouth is so messed up. And he's got these guys calling long distance going, Terry, when are you coming back to town? We need you out here." And then he heads back to Tennessee so he can make another round through those groups. The damnedest thing ever. He's got a little wife now. They live in Montana, and he's doing great. I could tell you 100 things just like that. God love you. I could tell you 100 things just like that that have happened over the years as a direct result of doing this stuff. Guys, it's about one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. One cocaine addict working with another cocaine addict. Like, the miracle of this fellowship happens when we do that. And as you do that, you will get better. And the stuff that you think is so important, I got guys that I work with, and they keep saying, "Myers, I got a job today." I go, "Great." "Well, you don't sound real excited." I said, "Well, you know what, bud? If you want to know the honest truth, I don't give a rat's ass if you got a job today. I really don't. I want to know 2 things. How much time did you spend with God today? And how much time did you spend working with another alcoholic? That's all I care about." You see? He said, "Well, that's not really what I wanted in a sponsor. I want somebody to butt around with." Screw it. I don't have time to butt around with you because I'm too busy trying to help this man. And you should too. Guys, I'm at our meeting 2 hours. Before every meeting we have, I'm there 2 hours early so I can talk about that guy's day and his job and his girlfriend and his car and his, you name it. Whatever he wants to talk about, I'm going to be there to do that before that meeting. But when that cowbell rings, we're going to talk about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous truth in 164 pages. There it is. And that's what we're going to talk about. Nothing else. Because the book tells me if I'll talk about that, God will take care of every other problem I've got. The legal stuff, the relationship stuff, all of the stuff that's got you twisted up tonight, all the stuff, the money, everything will be dealt with if you'll just do the work. Sounds simple? It is simple. It is. I'm done. Please do this. If you're going to a group, if you go to a group now that's sick and all twisted up and you can't get any relief there, go find another group. Please. Please. I don't know. If your sponsor is all not doing what he's supposed to be doing, if your sponsor is, people ask me all the time, how do you pick a good sponsor? You do it. It's real simple. You walk up to him and say, sir, have you had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing these steps? And if he looks at you like this, go find somebody else. If he's not having the psychic change, you don't want him. Because he's got nothing but some friendship to pass along to you. I know that offends some people. I'm not trying to offend you. Look, at 7 years sober, I had to go work back through this work again. You can do it at 15. You can do it at 20. If AA is slick to you today, if you're slick and bored with recovery, go back through the work with somebody who's had that psychic change and you will be new. I called Chris one Friday morning after that meeting. I said, Chris, I don't know how I'm going to be able to tell you this. I'm really embarrassed to admit it. I said, you know that pink cloud stuff they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous? The stuff we felt like when we first came into the fellowship all those years ago? He said, yeah. I said, I'm starting to feel that way again. And you know what he said? He said, why be embarrassed? The pink cloud is a gift from God, and we ought to be feeling it every day. And if you're not feeling it today, guys, it's your fault. Come on with us. Come on. Guys, I love recovery, and I love this stuff more than anything in my life. It has brought so much to my life. My wife loves me. My daughters don't duck when I walk in the room anymore. I have toys around. I've got everything a man could want. I've got. But most important, I get calls all the time. Let me tell you something. If you think what I'm saying is horseshit, you some night wait until you get this call about 11 o'clock at night from a woman who's crying. And she's thanking you for bringing her husband back because of the message that you carried to that man. You see? That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, guys. The blessings of being able to carry a simple message of recovery, not my opinion, a simple message of recovery out of this book to someone so that they can recover and have that change. It's the greatest gift we've been given. And I can't tell you, nothing would make me prouder than to have this group standing shoulder to shoulder with me, walking through this stuff, carrying this message to a bunch of people that are out there tonight hurting. I'll be here with you, man. Thanks for letting us come.